From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the fourth day of April 2012. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley at ADM Investor Services. He's in Oakland, Illinois. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. In today's agricultural news, the U.S. Secretary of Treasury is calling on congressional leaders to invest in education, infrastructure, and U.S. aid to boost exports. JBS, the Brazilian meatpacking giant, is on the hunt for acquisitions to increase its influence. And St. Louis-based Monsanto has reported a very strong second quarter in its fiscal year, that based on good seed sales last fall. Dave Dickey will be along in a moment with these and many more ag news stories. And then I'll tell you how Illinois farmers are breaking with the trend across the Midwest and mostly staying with their crop rotations. As we close out our program today, we'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. He'll preview what may be a very cold, even frosty forecast for parts of the lower Midwest. Now, at least a very low corn belt. We'll do that as we close out our program on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media at the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Checking now the numbers as they settled up in Chicago for the day on a Wednesday afternoon. Futures were lower in the wheat pit nearby May contract. $6.39 and a quarter down 18 and three quarters. July at $6.49 and three quarters, 19 and a quarter cents lower. In September, wheat at $6.63 and three quarters in Chicago for the soft red, down 19 and three quarters. The hard red in Kansas City settled the July harvest month at $6.79, down 20 and a quarter cents. May corn futures, $6.56 and three quarters, a penny and a half lower for the day. July at $6.50 and three quarters, down 2 and a quarter. And September at $5.64 and three quarters, 3 and three quarters lower. December corn at $5.44 and a quarter, down a penny and a quarter. And the March at $5.54 and three quarters, down 3/4 of a cent. May of next year at $5.62 and three quarters, 3 quarters lower. And July of next year at $5.69 and a quarter, down 1 and 3/4 of a cent. May beans at $14.19 and a half, up 2 and 3/4. July at $14.23 and three quarters, 2 and a half higher. August soybeans $14.16 and three quarters, 3 and a quarter higher. September down a quarter at $13.92 and three quarters. And November beans $13.75 and a half, down 3 and a quarter. January futures of 2013 at $13.74 and a half, down 2 and a quarter cents. Live cattle futures finished the nearby June at $115.12 and a half, down 92 and a half. The May feeders at $148.20, 2 and a half cents lower. And May lean hogs at $92.75, down 47 and a half. You're listening to WILL AM 580 and Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. May crude oil futures at $101.77 a barrel, down $2.24. Ethanol at $2.26 and 6 tenths, a penny and a half lower. Natural gas at $2.13 and 7 tenths, down 5 cents for the day. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.16 and a half. Down 6 1/10 of a cent. Gold futures on the afternoon at $1,612.30 an ounce, down $57.70. And the dollar at 79.7. That's up 0.29. The CRB index at 304.96, down 5.79 on the day. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area says that this evening we'll see partly cloudy skies, a low of 42 degrees with a northeast wind at about 15 miles an hour. That'll gust all the way to 20. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny skies across the area, a high of 57 degrees with an east-northeast wind at 13 to 15, gusting to 20. And Thursday night, mostly clear skies, a low of 35 degrees, a northeast wind at 9 to 15. Friday, sunny and 61. Friday night, clear and 40. Saturday, sunny and 66, and Saturday night, a chance of showers, a few thunderstorms too, mostly cloudy and a low of 48 degrees. On Sunday, sunny skies and 65, Sunday night, partly cloudy and 45, Monday, sunny and 62, Monday night, partly cloudy and 38, and by the time we get to Tuesday of next week, mostly sunny skies and a high near 54 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get closer to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programs as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois on a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line with us from Oakland, Illinois, at ADM Investor Services, Paul Cooley. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, it looks like the outside markets are back in to the commodities again today, at least for a portion of the day. Tell me what happened with Spain and how it impacted the marketplace, and if there are other things afoot.
Well, there was this general feeling that the Spanish stock market, Spain stock market's been lower, and the European stock markets are lower, and of course the U.S. stock market's lower. There was a basic report here that the Federal Reserve basically are tabling any quantitative easing for a while because of the strength in the U.S. economy. The big factor, of course, is that the commodities in Chicago, particularly soybeans, ignored all the bad news out there. But the one commodity that did jump out at me today, Todd, was, of course, wheat. The first thing when I come into the office early in the morning, I look at, of course, the weather, and particularly in the wheat area, and it basically included this anniversary date of April 7th, 2007 is a notable anniversary date on cold weather in the wheat country, and the temperatures look like that they're going to be cold on the 9th and 10th, but basically, you know, trouble-free, and it's a wetter forecast. It's a wetter forecast in Brazil, wetter forecast in Europe, wetter forecast here in the U.S., and as a result of that, my customers are honing in on a wheat crop that's probably going to be 30 days early, probably harvested 30 days quicker, basically a fungus-free wheat crop. And as a result of that, wheat was down 19 and a quarter when everybody added up the same numbers that I added up.
Okay, so they looked out and said, we see the cold weather, we're not certain that it's far enough out, and we'll hear this a bit later in the program, that we're uncertain as to whether it will be around, but right now we've got wheat up and growing, and it looks like it's going to be a pretty good crop, and it will be coming in disease-free, and that will increase yield?
That's right, and as a result of that, if we can escape this cold weather, you know, it could even be a bigger crop, and the Informa people came in today with a number close to 135 million above a year ago. So those add up and caught, you know, our attention early in the morning. The outside market, of course, the bean market is getting all these reports, particularly Informa, and have been leaked that the soybean crop in Argentina and Brazil are smaller. The demand, as a result of that, the carryover in the world is going to be very snug. One report said Brazil has 75% of their beans harvested. Argentina has only 10% harvested. Our bottom line is that we didn't think Argentina's crop would be quite that small because of, you know, more of a normal weather forecast and rainfall events in their key growing period of August, but it'll be interesting to see how the USDA adjusts that, you know, next week.
Yeah, next week in the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates, and it'll be the first estimate, of course, after we've got the prospective plantings report, and after the, more importantly, the grain stocks numbers came out last Friday. How do you think they will justify the change in the grain stocks, and where will those changes be put into place, if at all, for the WASDE numbers?
Well, we have to go back, and we had a rugged week last week. And of course, that major sell-off last week, and particularly on Thursday, and poor old Dan had to live through that one in its entirety. I had 10 or 15 people call me up, and sounded like Dan was crying when he came out of the principal's office. And I said, don't pick on him too much. He's going to be right, and he was right with this bullish report. I think the big factor here is that the government, came in with these smaller stocks numbers, and we're not going to argue much about that, but the Informa group, and I noticed this, that we're a little bit short of about 4 million acres, 2 million in the wheat area, and 2 million in row crop. And at the same time, we do feel that the bean number will probably get a little larger with two reasons. You know, fertilizer price levels of $14 or close to it. But it's going to, the bean market is fundamentally a very bullish commodity. We do have this enormous potential with a lot of corn next year as well as wheat. And so it's an easy deal. You know, people are talking about bullish old corn, bearish new, bullish old corn, bearish wheat. And the bean market is pretty stellar in itself. But one of the things, the good thing about it is you have to treat beans very carefully and gingerly, both on the long and short side at this higher price level.
You know what, in old crop, for both corn and soybeans, are you thinking that $14 beans and current price level for corn is not a bad place to come back in and make some fresh sales as an increment of whatever's left in the bins?
Well, you know, it's generally talked about, and of course the other factor is that we have to carefully point out is that with this warmer early season, you know, we are seeing some corn here in Oakland 3 inches tall or higher, and that does mean an earlier than normal harvest, and wheat is probably going to turn into a feed grain. It, you know, this level up to $7, I think, is a marketable commodity. How the market will react with a 700 million carryover, you know, that's going to be a bullish item. And the soybeans, you know, definitely are a very tight commodity, particularly with the South American shortfall. There's just no doubt about it. We are going to have to basically find 4 million more acres of soybeans than what the government said. And I think we'll find at least 2 or 3, but it's a $1 million guessing game. The government sometimes errs in that way to encourage production.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
Have a profitable day, and nice talking to you.
And it's good to talk to you, too, Paul. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Hey, you know, yesterday I told you that Friday the markets are closed and we'd be using John Bondurant in that program along with our Commodity Week program. I talked to Daryl Good this morning. And we'll put John and Daryl both into those slots. I'm just not quite sure how they'll be divvied up, but you'll be wanting to listen to both Closing Market Report and Commodity Week on Friday and then again on Saturday or on the website one way or the other to hear from both of those quite good analysts. Now, Dave Dickey is here with us. He'll take us through the Ag News for the afternoon.
In agricultural news, Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner says that despite marked improvement since the financial crisis, more needs to be done to strengthen the U.S. economy, and Washington leaders need to act. Geithner says that plans floated in Congress and on the campaign trail to deeply slash government spending will not lead to additional growth. Geithner called for additional investment in education, infrastructure, and aid to boost exports. Geithner made his remarks this morning in a speech before the Economic Club of Chicago. Brazilian meatpacking heavyweight JBSSA is back on the hunt for acquisitions after a two-year pause, seeking to capitalize on an upturn in the domestic beef market. Behind the company's plan is a profitable local environment in which cattle prices are expected to fall due to the large size of the Brazilian herd, while demand is steadily rising. JBS engaged in a frenzy of acquisitions during the last decade to become the world's largest beef producer, but made none in 2010 or 2011. Monsanto says a strong and early U.S. seed selling season drove its fiscal second quarter net income up 19%. The U.S. agricultural giant also raised its earnings outlook for the full year. Monsanto says today it earned $1.21 billion, or $2.24 a share, in the quarter ending in February, compared with $1.02 billion, or $1.88 a share, a year earlier. Revenue rose 15% to $4.75 billion. Monsanto boosted its expectations for full-year adjusted earnings by 10 cents per share, to a range of $3.49 to $3.54. Two Brazilian ag consulting firms have lowered their soybean estimates. AgriConsult reduced its local soybean crop forecast to 65.2 million metric tons due to the impact of a severe drought in the south and lighter-than-expected bean crops in the center west. The number is lower than most estimates, which currently generally sit in the 66 million to 68 million ton range. Solaris cut its forecast for Brazil's soybean production to 67.97 million metric tons, down from its earlier forecast of 69.83 million tons. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. The markets are closed on Friday of this week, and I've been busy working to put together some shows for both Commodity Week and the Friday Closing Market Report. Yesterday, I told you we would talk with John Bondurant, Bondurant Futures out of Memphis, Tennessee, and certainly we will do that. I'll record that tomorrow morning at about 11 a.m., but I do have Daryl Good as an interview as well. Recorded that this morning at 11 o'clock, and we'll hear that either Friday in the Closing Market Report or Saturday in Commodity Week. Either way, John and Daryl will both be put into the Commodity Week rotation up on our website with willag.org, and both of those will probably show up long before they ever air on the radio station, so go visit at willag.org. Scroll down the page, look for the tabs in the middle, and follow the Commodity Week link. We'll put Daryl Good and John Bondurant and the interviews I've done with them this week right there on the webpage at willag.org. Now, up next, you know, early last week, an ag economist right here on campus, and not Daryl, but Gary Schnitke, suggested the marketplace was telling farmers in this state that planting a few more soybeans might be a good, stable financial decision for the coming year. And then came the prospective plantings report, and it showed, in fact, that farmers had taken that cue in Illinois. The United States Department of Agriculture surveys farmers in early March to find out how many acres they'll plant of each of the primary crops. Those numbers are compiled and then released as the prospective plantings report. It showed, as University of Illinois Farm Management Specialist Gary Schnitke had suggested, that Illinois farmers would plant a few more acres of soybeans, up 100,000, and a few less acres of corn, down 100,000. The USDA survey results squared nicely with a model run Schnitke did on the state using Illinois' Planting Decision Model spreadsheet. That planting decision model calculates crop budgets looking for profitability. Schnitke reported results from the model on the FarmDoc Daily website March the 27th and made these comments that same day.
These results would suggest that we won't see much shift to corn. If anything, a stable rotation in these models suggest, a corn soybeans or corn soybeans rotation will be just as profitable as continuous corn. I suspect we won't see much shift to corn and maybe even a shift back to soybeans a bit because of the experiences many farmers had with large yield drags on corn after corn the past two years. We've seen many farms, particularly in central Illinois, have much lower corn after corn yields and corn after soybean yields.
The switch to soybeans reported by USDA, slight though it was in Illinois, was unique among the top five corn and soybean growing states in the nation. Illinois was the only one to increase soybean acres and also the only one not to increase corn acres. Farmers in Iowa are expected to plant 500,000 more acres of corn this year. Nebraskan farmers 450,000 more acres. Minnesotans up the ante by 600,000. And even Indiana farmers are expected to increase planted acres by 200,000. Now, while Schnitke did not take up the differences between Illinois and the other four states, he did say the planting decision model shows it to be more profitable to plant corn in Illinois, just not continuously.
And the reason for that is those rotations, corn after corn, we built in a 10-bushel yield drag into corn after corn compared to corn after soybeans. And the rotations actually get you that higher return to corn after soybeans and less of the corn after corn.
So Illinois farmers recognize that in order to get the most out of the corn crop, it pays to rotate. Those wanting to download and use the planting decision model spreadsheet in Illinois or any other state for that matter can find it on the FarmDoc website at farmdoc.illinois.edu. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's a Wednesday afternoon. This is the Closing Market Report. On the phone line to take up the cash grain markets, Ben Stoller of the Anderson's Climbers Facility in Delphi, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Ben. How are you?
Doing well, Todd. Yourself?
I'm doing very well. Farmers have been moving in the field and planting any corn in your area?
They certainly have. We have reports of some guys even, believe it or not, wrapping up some corn acreage.
That's pretty early.
That is early, especially since it's before the official crop insurance date.
Yeah, I suspect that you won't hear very many of them say they wrapped it up before the official date, but it looks like weather should hold, at least in our part of the world, although there's some cold temperatures that are frosty, even frigid, that may come in later next week to Tennessee and some of the southern part of the Corn Belt, I suppose. But at this point, we were concerned about the cash grain market and basis in your area. How's it been handling the ups and downs of the market in the recent days?
You know, really, corn basis has remained firm. We've even seen a little bit of an uptick here with increased action in the fields, farmers going to the fields. Looks like corn's going to be a little harder to come by, so processors have been bidding up. We're seeing corn basis anywhere in the mid to upper 20s.
You know, one other thing, and this is just slightly off the cash grain side, but since you have an ethanol plant, have you heard much talk, because there's an awful lot of chatter about going to E15 and whether U.S. EPA, which has already approved that, will manage to push it further down the line and take advanced out of the front of corn-based ethanol. What kinds of political jargon are you hearing at this time?
You know, honestly, not hearing a lot. I know there was some news that came out, was it early this week or last week, that EPA did approve quite a bit of that. So I don't know. That's certainly something us in the ethanol industry would love to see. Ethanol stocks are high right now, and with fuel gasoline as high as it has been, demand hasn't been real strong. So if we could see an increase in E15, that would certainly help those in the ethanol industry.
And what are your bids for the day?
We got corn to Delphi, 670, corn to Climbers, 682, corn to Ibeck, 672, and beans to Delphi, 1407.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Ben Stoller of the
Anderson's. Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
It's National Cordon Bleu Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1828, Casparus van Woden of Amsterdam patented chocolate milk powder. In 1871, Mary Florence Potts of Ottumwa, Iowa, patented the Mrs. Potts sad iron. It featured a detachable handle so several iron bodies could be heated and used in turn as one cooled down. Three irons, one handle, and one stand were sold as a set. In 1883, Peter Cooper died.
Cooper obtained the first American patent for the manufacture of gelatin. In 1895, a cough syrup manufacturer, Pearl B. Waite, purchased the patent and developed a packaged gelatin dessert. Waite's wife, May, named it Jell-O. In 1887, William Cumming Rose was born. An American biochemist, he spent a decade researching human diet. His research established the importance of 8 essential amino acids in human nutrition. And in 1932, vitamin C was isolated by C.G. King at the University of Pittsburgh. After 5 years of work on untold thousands of lemons, King and his colleagues isolated a crystalline substance identified as vitamin C. King was given a patent for his isolation process, but he was denied a patent for the vitamin itself since it was a known substance that had been isolated by a different method 3 years earlier. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City on the phone line. Drew, it's a little cooler today than it has been in recent days, but feels, I'm not even sure it feels like April, but it feels more seasonable, I suppose, at this point. What do you see for our weather forecast locally?
You know, what are we going to do when it gets cold next week? We're all going to be wearing our winter coats and crawling into the closest furnace hole that we can find. It's going to get rather nippy next week. Frost and freeze is coming back into a part of the Midwest, and it's going to make today seem like a balmy afternoon. We are expecting the trend to reverse from all the warmth we've had here recently, and definitely looking at a cooler bias as we move forward through the weekend and into next week. It'll take a while for this cold air to arrive, so it's not something that's going to happen tomorrow or anything quite like that. But we do have a little disturbance that's in the Central Plains today that will be coming eastward into Illinois and parts of the Northern Delta and then move off to the southeast corner of the country over the next 2 days, and showers and some thunderstorms will occur in all of those areas, really from Nebraska and Kansas into Illinois, maybe the southern half of Indiana, and then southward to the Gulf Coast states. The precipitation is not going to be very well organized. A few areas might pick up an inch of rain. Many, many others, though, will pick up a few hundredths of an inch, upwards to maybe 2 or 3 tenths of an inch. Some local totals around a half will probably be most likely. The northern half of the Midwest will stay dry. So northern Illinois over to Ohio and northward through Michigan and Wisconsin, even Minnesota, will not see any precipitation from this event. Another frontal system, the one that's going to bring the cold air around, will show itself later this weekend. It's not going to carry a lot of precipitation with it because the Gulf of Mexico will not be open as a moisture source. So we'll end up with a scattering of showers, maybe producing a quarter of an inch of rain, maybe a local half-inch amount, coverage maybe 40%, and then the temperatures will start progressively cooling. Our coolest morning probably will be somewhere around Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. At the moment, the models keep suggesting frost and freezes may occur down south of the Ohio River into the Tennessee Basin and parts of the Carolinas. That's the area that we're going to be watching closely for midweek next week for temperatures near or below freezing that could be damaging to some wheat and corn. But I think the heart of the Midwest will probably not be subjected to much in the way of serious damaging conditions.
Wow, that would be cold, and it would be deep enough there'd be corn and wheat both that could be in real trouble in some of those areas.
That's right. And before we get too carried away, I always have to give you the disclaimer that this is a full week away, and we don't want to just assume that the models are going to be exactly right, because they hardly ever are. But the point is that there is a risk of frost and freezes, and it is worth everyone's paying attention to it, because if we do end up with a problem in these areas, the market will be reacting.
And then turn your attention to other parts of the globe you've been interested in. I would think you've had a watchful eye on China as they begin their growing season.
Absolutely. China is doing very well at the moment. There is a little bit of a bias for below-average precipitation to occur in what they call the North China Plain, which is a very rich grain and oilseed-producing area. It tends to have dryness in the years when La Nina goes away, and so we want to watch that. I don't think it necessarily means it's going to turn into a droughty area, but I think they're going to get less than usual precipitation later this month into May, maybe even into early June. So we'll watch that area. But for right now, China's crops are in just about about ideal condition with exception of the far north east where some spring wheaters need some moisture.
Thanks so much, Drew.
Have a great day.
Hey, you too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated, and that wraps up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.